listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, November 16th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael and everybody. I'm glad to be here as always.
Well, as always, I'm glad to have you and as always, glad to have those that are joining us live in chat. We also appreciate those that take the time to catch us with us in the archives. We appreciate you taking the time out of your week, and we appreciate your feedback. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, as always, before we get into our topic, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, on to tonight's topic, exploring transhumanism. And Dr. Vicki, I know we want to give a special shout out to Dr. Greg, who had emailed this suggestion in. Thank you for your feedback, Dr. Greg, and your suggestions. We've gotten a couple from you in the past, always a good topics. And exploring transhumanism is a little new for Dr. Vicki and I. We had to do some research. And Dr. Vicki and I were talking about this prior to the broadcast. She said that she's going to basically take it from here, and I'm just going to kind of sit back and listen. So, Dr. Vicki, go away.
Oh, no. That's not quite the way it went, everybody.
Oh, come on. I said it's real now.
When I was doing some research, I got to tell you, I was really quite fascinated with the topic. And because transhumanism is not a phrase that was particularly familiar to me. But it goes back to early 20th century and just the whole idea. This is pre-technology kind of stuff. It kind of goes back to eugenics and what the ideas at that time were for kind of making people, like the anti-aging movement.
Right.
You know, the building strength, creating a better memory. So working on the mind so that eugenics was not superhuman, but for lack of better terms at that point, that's what they were looking for, is more the superhuman. How do we make ourselves better, more stronger, more intelligent, like increasing how much of our brain that we use, that kind of thing.
Right, kind of transcending, you know, the level of humanity that we're at now. And considering that in the early 20th century, it began with eugenics, breeding and things like that, I think that's a great place to start. And, you know, we can get into the ethics of eugenics and things like that, too. So, you know, there have been ideas kind of around this going back a long time. When it comes into the modern era, Dr. Vicki, you and I were talking about some of the more fundamental ideas of transhumanism first advanced in 1923 by a British geneticist, J.B.S. Haldane. And with, you know, that many initials in a name, you got to be smart. But when we talk about eugenics and when it was being advanced in the early 20s, we have to also remember this is before Nazism. This is before, you know, those kind of eugenics really showed the dark side of things. But, you know, the idea of eugenics, can we control, you know, the development of us through selective breeding, essentially, like we would with a breed of dog or something like that? You know, it I think to the modern sensibility, especially in this kind of open society of, you know, free choice and free will and things like that, it kind of goes against the grain of what we would think of as ethical and moral, of people, basically the strong deserve to survive. And I'm talking about, you know, some of the more hardcore aspects, perhaps, of eugenics. But, you know, people like myself, you know, I'm nearsighted, asthmatic, horrible sinuses in allergy season and not in allergy season. And, you know, my pure love of sci-fi and things like that. I mean, I don't know if I would be a candidate for eugenics, you know.
Oh, but a pill could fix all that.
Well, that's the more modern idea, isn't it? So before they had such advances in medicine and computing technology and different forms of all kinds of technologies that would augment humanity in that kind of artificial way, they were talking eugenics and creating a more perfect human.
But, you see, I'm really glad that you brought up that it's pre-Hitler, and because I know Hitler really ran with that, but the study of this was, you know, long before, and I just had a flash like of the Frankenstein kind of story, you know, taking body parts and building a new kind of creature or being, and how I think in many ways human beings have been toying with this or on the edge of this for a very long time. Mm-hmm. You know, we could probably go back thousands of years for that matter. But, you know, if we just take it within the last 100 years, and how far we've come and who has done what with those ideas that have brought us forward to this moment.
Right, exactly. And it, like everything else in life, it's a very complicated thing. And it is always natural for human beings to try to advance ourselves spiritually, intellectually, culturally. And that's a good thing. It's how we advance. But when you have people that take a very harsh stance that abandon the philosophy of balance between things, and they focus in on these kind of, you know, harsh eugenics, that's where you get things like Nazism, of a master race, of a group of people that are superior to others. And, well, that's kind of the idea behind transhumanism in some ways, isn't it? Is to create a superior human. And if we were to do that, you know, what does that mean about the rest of us? But,
well, Dr. Zach is saying in the chat, he's never heard of the positive side of eugenics. But I'd like to just address that for a second. I think everyone starts out with a positive kind of slice on it. You know, how to improve something, because we're all looking for a better can opener. We're all looking for a better toothpaste. We're all looking for something better. So I think it all starts out as, you know, fairly innocent in that way. But then the negatives come in, such as the anti-aging movement. And, of course, now we've, you know, let's roll with it to Botox. You know?
We don't
want to age and we don't want to die. So.
And those that are very strict in saying that only the strong should survive, you know, would abandon those that have ailments, that have, you know, maybe disabilities, things like that. And we can look at objective reality. We can point to facts where people that had disabilities, people that had disadvantages, in fact, had a perspective that was unique to them, that benefited not only, you know, their own world, but their own group, but humanity. It benefited all of us. They were able to bring things to the table that nobody else could, and we see the value in that, and we realize this, you know, strict adherence to, you know, some of the fanatical eugenicists that believe that, you know, in Nazi concentration camps, the disabled would be put to death and things like that. you can't go about doing things that way. It just, it doesn't work. It falls through. And so, you know, we can start with this idea of eugenics is kind of where transhumanism kind of originated, but really it picked up steam in the middle 20th century when you could bring other advances in technology to bear, computer science, different robotics.
I'd like to just inject here a positive side of what I think falls in this category, Michael, is people who've had artificial limbs built for themselves, and now, of course, trying to attach it to brain impulses.
Absolutely.
They're, you know, taking brain impulses to people who are paraplegic, quadriplegic, and again, the mechanisms of the brain stimulating nervous systems. And so there's a lot of advancements that certainly have benefited those who have been disadvantaged in life in some way. So there's kind of filling in blanks here where there are some, I think, under transhumanism in that way of improving, I think that is good. Now, like, we haven't gone into artificial intelligence yet, but I'm just saying these little segues of what you're talking about too, these advancements, and especially in the middle of the, you know, the 20th century where, you know, there was a real build-up into, wow, how can we use it here? How can we use it there? And, of course, some people are runaway trains, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you're absolutely right when it comes to things like amputees, to where we can help people with MS, where we can do, you know, hopefully advance these technologies. There's wonderful potential. But I think what we learned by moving beyond eugenics, because eugenics itself is just, that's touchy. Yes, that's kind of where it started, but that's not where it stopped. And yes, eugenics is not the way to go. We don't force people to do anything. We don't try to create a more perfect version of humans because, as several people have pointed out in chat, we are perfect as we are. Perfect works in progress, right? But we can always strive to be better. We're always in progress. And so when it comes to things like that, you mentioned the amputees, and that's a perfect example of how technology and the fusion of technology and biology has helped those that need it. And we can even move beyond, because when we talk about transhumanism, it's, you know, it's a goal to use, you know, as we get into the technological age and we move beyond eugenics, we start looking for how can these emerging technologies overcome our fundamental limitations. How can, you know, longevity, cognition, the ability to think and process information faster. And some of you, I don't know how well it's coming across. My dog Mira is in the other room, but she is disagreeing with some of these points, and I don't know why. I feel like it's very reasonable.
I just like to inject here. Audra said she's always understood eugenics to be a search for perfection, but it is insensitive to what that means to people who don't fit in whatever category encompasses. And so she thinks it's, she adds, you know, it's a real weird and twisted take, in my opinion. And I think this is a really important point. What you've just brought up, Michael, is what is everybody's idea of perfection?
Exactly. Exactly.
And striving for better, more, and of course now wanting the superhuman. So now we can get into something like nanotechnologies and, you know, other kinds of technologies that are evolving, that are, you know, altering the human DNA.
Yeah.
And I just, honestly, I just read an article the other day about a certain nanotechnology that can be matched to someone's DNA to change the points of proteins that don't help you cure cancer. And I'm thinking, wow, that's like a blew my mind of, you know, how they can take your DNA, alter it, re-inject it into your, into you, and, you know, whatever wasn't working before, like, we have our own defense, you know, sensitivities and proteins and all these things that cure ourselves from, you know, the common cold, the flu, whatever else, but sometimes they don't work against something like cancer. And because there's a mixed message in those proteins. So now they can alter that. And I'm thinking, whoa, that's taking it. This is taking transhumanism to that next level. That's not yet what we're talking about, going to talk about tonight with artificial intelligence. But I thought,
definitely going to touch on it. We're going to.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think that that's, while I think those things are extraordinary, there are, as you touched on, Michael, the ethics and the moralities of things, and I think we all can agree that if you can afford those things, you're going to be one of those to survive.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
if
that's...
you're low on the totem pole, you're not going to be privy to any of the knowledge, let alone the, you know, the
right.
possibility.
And there is the ethical question, you know, when we have
yes.
these abilities, when we can edit our genetic makeup and, you know, you can have designer children, for example. We already have mm-hmm. that. You can pick the yeah. hair color, the eye color, things like that. Yeah. When it comes to health and being able to remove, you know, ailments, how do you determine who gets it? Is it only the wealthy? Is it only the people that have connections? How do you do that fairly? And, you know, there's so many fascinating aspects to this. And before we move on too much longer, Audra, one of our, you know, regular listeners, and she always joins us in chat. We appreciate contributions. Asked if anybody had heard of Neil Harbison. And I hadn't, so I had to do a quick lookup. Kind of a fascinating thing. He is a Catalan-born British-Irish-American cyborg artist.
Oh, that's wow.
And what he does is he's often known for being, according to Wikipedia, so definitely not my source here, he is often known for being the first person in the world to have an antenna implanted in his skull that allows him to essentially how do they say this, and I want to, I'm kind of scrolling here.
Audra says see color through sound.
Yes, exactly. Seeing color through sound, and you know, using that for his art. And that's kind of approaching the idea of the singularity, right? And just to give you a brief, very, you know, my level of layman kind of explanation mm-hmm. of the singularity being when we reach that point in computer science where consciousness can join with a, you know, with technology, with a computer, where you can essentially transfer your being into an electronic medium. So there's so many questions. I'm looking forward to getting into that. But yeah, that's absolutely you know, very crucial to the idea of transhumanism, is this idea of using technology to augment our normal senses, just like Mr. Harbison used an antenna to allow him to, you know, hear color. Yeah,
that's wild.
It is.
But again, where do we fit into this really radical shift in 100 years?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going so fast. What does that mean for the next 10 years? Let alone the next 100 years? I mean,
right.
Star Trek, here we come. But I think that there's, in so many ways, because of technology, humans are no longer necessary. And so, you know what I'm saying here, Michael?
Yeah.
It's because you got technology, basically computers doing all this other work. Okay, we went from the Industrial Revolution where machines took over the actual labor of things. Not a bad thing, but now we have, of course, everybody knows the mm-hmm. self-checkout counter. We don't need clerks anymore. But
well,
it goes even deeper, further more from there about how much, you know, technology really starts to cooperate and coexist with human beings,
mm-hmm.
and where, like, how do we partner with that, and where do we find our own place if you're not one who can get the super chip in the
right,
brain,
right? And
as Jamil calls it,
yes, exactly. It's, you know, it just brings us back to all of this revolves around the idea of ethics. Who gets to be a superhuman, you know, the Ubermensch, you know, who gets to get that role? But, you know, I think when we think about one thing that kind of caught me, and this is like a little aside, one of the things that Neil Harbison is famous for is being an activist for trans species rights. And wasn't familiar with that term, so that's another link to click on. And transspecies is the field of psychology that states humans and non-human animals share commonalities in cognition and emotions, which is something I've believed for a very long time, that we, you know, what it is to be alive is much more universal than we think, that animals and humans share much when it comes to cognition and emotion. It's just humans, we have the computing power to fully express it. Animals don't have the full computing power for their awareness to show in ways that we would recognize as sentient. But also, I'm just going to take a little aside here, but when we talk about the difference between humanity and the animal kingdom, it's always, for much of human history, been this stark division in a lot of different societies. There have been some societies that are much closer to nature, and they have a much different approach, and I respect that, and I largely agree with it. But this idea that animals are so far beneath us has never struck me as right. We're on the same spectrum. But coming back to transhumanism, and I think one of the most interesting things, Jamila talked about a chip in the head, and I think nanotechnology is one of those kind of vanguard sciences that's on the edge. And the potential for these things are striking. But again, when it comes to nanotechnology being able to cure cancers, to go into the cellular level and fix things, great treatments. But what about actually putting a chip in your head that allows you to process information faster, that makes you smarter? Where do we draw the line? Dr. Iona put in chat that she thinks it's interesting how artificial solutions to biological problems can backfire and produce entirely new problems requiring even more artificial solutions. And at what point do you stop messing with Mother Nature? A good question and a hard balance to find. Do we stop? We obviously move beyond Mother Nature in terms of curing diseases through artificial means in ways that we wouldn't have been able to in the past. But it's a balance, right? We always have to remember the balance, in my mind.
Well, yeah, totally, Michael. I think what's a real concern to me is at what point are we no longer human, but changing ourselves into a different type of species?
Interesting.
Are those who consciously realize that we're doing that? I think there's that post-humanism question, are we now creating two different species, those who are altered and those who are not.
Right.
So, and that actually has been posed. I didn't know there was so much writing on transhumanism. It's quite mind-blowing to everybody if you start to research it a bit. But that was one of the questions, and I thought, yeah, well, I've already thought about that. Like, what happens when you get, let's say that population that's altered in their DNA and, their basic structures, and others who are not? Now, we have created two species.
Exactly. We can already see that, we have the designer babies. You can use certain gene editing technologies. What if you use genetic engineering to create smarter children, children that are stronger?
I think it's already out there.
Mm-hmm. Very possibly. Children
just
that
like
have... Yeah.
Which, cloning falls into that same category.
And another... Exactly. Another, ethical question. Cloning has its certain, what is the ethics of cloning? The ideas of benefits to medicine where you could kind of clone a body and then use the organs. Well, what about the rights of that life?
Exactly.
And I have always had a theory that a soul is something that is created more than what we're born with. A soul is created from awareness, from living, from suffering, from understanding, from being observant. I think a soul grows. And so when we think about a clone, does a clone have a soul? And I would say if we are getting to that realm of, we're cloning an actual human being, then yes, it does. It has a soul because it thinks, because it is aware.
That opens up a whole...
Well, and I think we have to define what is a soul, right?
I think a soul already is part of a universal process that coagulates in a way that to enter a body. And a consciousness is the mind when those two are joined.
Right.
That's my take on it. But when... You're right, though. If that's the question, I have no answer for this, Michael.
Well, let's...
And there was actually a doctor, I believe he was in Japan. he actually admitted to cloning a human, and he was vastly scolded by the scientific and medical community for it, and punished, I might add, too. But I think he was the only one who actually said he did it. I think it's been done. But if you're cloning, and it is this apparent conscious being that can think, walk, talk, and process, and has an intelligence, at what point has the soul joined that entity? You know, and I don't have any answers to this at all, but it does pose a lot of questions about consciousness and how we exist and how we're evolving in that.
Absolutely. And Audra put in chat that she agrees with a lot of the criteria that I was talking about, you know, the kind of growing of a soul. But if it's a cyborg, does it develop a soul? I'll give you one further. Artificial intelligence. If we can create self-aware artificial intelligence, can it have a soul? And I know that you, Dr. Vicky, and I disagree on this point, because I think that artificial intelligence, if you have something that is self-aware, that can experience, react to stimuli, experience maybe even basic emotion, especially if something can suffer. If something has the ability to suffer, I think it undoubtedly has a soul attached to it. And if a soul is cognition and awareness, then can an artificial creature have a soul? Now, I believe, and I think this is scientifically proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Data from Star Trek, famous crew member of the Enterprise D, died protecting Captain Picard. Absolutely, he had a soul, and he was artificial, and that's proven science. So I think that's settled. But
Michael, he was programmed to emote with certain stimuli. That's not a soul.
But yes, he was also programmed to evolve on his own way and to create new subroutines and things to adapt and to kind of explore his own way around. And I will also submit to you this. Are we not machines in a different way? Biochemical machines.
Yeah.
We all have programming. We all have these instincts that drive our desires. You know, you have to stop and think sometimes, why is it that you want the things in the life that you want? It's because we are the human animal, and this is our programming. But yet we can alter our programming. We can change it.
You know, I want to mention, not an aside, but I really do, because this is really important. And you alluded to this earlier, Michael. Dr. Edward is saying in the chat, there's a movie called The Island, Cloning for the Purpose of Harvesting the Organs. Mm-hmm. This is already going on, by the way, people. People are, you can buy a kidney, you can buy, it's crazy. And then, of course, human trafficking for the purposes of those.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
I mean, so again, we have this elitism, and who, and I know Audra says, who's in charge here?
Right.
You know, and so this is another dilemma that we have as we continue to evolve. And when it comes to Jamil is saying, a good question, Jamil, would artificial intelligence have access to the universal intelligence in the way that we humans do? That is a profound question. And
absolutely.
This is why, although Michael and I have disagreed on a lot of things, it's more argumentative because I don't know the answer. But I'm not saying Michael's wrong.
Oh, and, come on now. How could that possibly be? I could never be wrong.
I just don't have enough information to. But when Jamil puts it that way, if we have access to the universal intelligence and bonding with a human, organic body, could a computer? I mean, that's a bonkers idea.
Well, and that leads directly to the singularity, and that's part of transhumanism, is the idea that we will get to the point where we can merge with a machine, where the entirety of our being, consciousness, can be transported into an electrical medium. And there's some great points in chat. There's a couple I want to touch on. Speaking of, going into a machine, Audra pointed out a light being is equal to electricity. Is that equal to a computer? If we are... We are all beings of electricity. That's one thing that's undisputed. We are beings of energy. Electricity powers everything about us. But again, what is it that leads to a soul? And does that soul transfer along with your consciousness? Dr. Ione had put in chat, are we a soul or do we have a soul? And if we have a soul, what does that mean? Who are we? You know? And that kind of brings me back to my analogy, if you will. If you're going to look at the human body like a computer, you have the hardware, right? Which is our physical being, our muscles, our brain power, all those things that are just the hardware of who we are. You have the software that runs that computer, the operating systems and things like that. It would be our instinct, what we're born with, the things that we know innately from those that came before us through genetic memory and through education, our own enlightenment that we personally do through life and education in a more structured way. But then we also have the user, right? The person using all of these things to do something. And I've always thought of that being the soul, of that being the consciousness. We're the user. Because a lot of people can have very similar hardware. They'll have very similar software, their education, their genetics. You know, you have siblings, go through the same school, born with the same, you know, DNA, or at least a good mix of it, even though we all kind of have a randomized mix from our ancestors. And that kind of comes into, well, why do they behave so differently? Because it's the user. It's that ineffable thing that is the soul. And, you know, can that transfer into an electronic medium? I don't know. And I don't think we will know until we've tried it. And while we've talked about the ethics of cloning another human, a full human, to then harvest organs from, I believe it was Audra that put in chat, you know, some of the amazing things that they can now conceive of and are pushing for to clone very specific organs. You don't clone an entire body, but you use almost like 3D printing to create specific organs that are specific to a person. And, of course, Kat, throw in chat as well that, you know, does that include the brain? And I think we're not there yet. We don't know how the brain works, which I think is why it's so difficult to answer these questions or even attempt to. But, you know, it is a fascinating field that, and, you know, I don't think we've even scratched the surface, but
I agree. Look, you know, I'd like to add in here, Dr. Zach says, it makes sense if energy can't be created or destroyed. And somehow consciousness is the energy that makes us go. It's only a matter of time before we can transfer consciousness into some sort of technology that can read it.
Right.
It makes sense. It does make sense. It just scares the crap out of me.
I know. But, and you know what scares me is that we're inevitably going to create true self-aware artificial intelligence. And the thing that terrifies me, human beings, being who we are, inevitably a good portion, if not a majority, will abuse that. They'll become slaves, and then you have the resentment, then you have Skynet, and then you have, you know, the Terminator thing, and what a mess.
Welcome to Marvel.
But that's why I think that's why I think a lot of, you know, morality is based around, can a thing suffer? You know, if you are forcing this entity, this artificial intelligence, to do your bidding all the time, are you denying it its own rights? If artificial intelligence gets advanced enough, does it get the right to vote? You know, at what level are we putting that in? And I like how you had quoted Dr. Zach there. It was a great point because, you know, you had talked about the you know, universal consciousness. And if there are souls out there, if we have a soul instead of are a soul, and they're looking for a conduit to plug into, and they find this conduit that, hey, it gives them everything that a biochemical machine like us could give them, why couldn't they plug into that and experience existence via that vehicle? So I think a lot of interesting questions, and, you know, I want to keep going, but I know we're getting into that time.
And we got some names for the card pulling already, but I would just like to end this conversation with a question that I have, but I have to preface it. It's... when I started doing readings over 50 years ago, it was somebody's life was much clearer and singular. It was like on a storyline, a track. As the decades went by and I talked to other readers that I know, we were all having the same issues. Probably around 2005, it really shifted, 2000, 2005, that I started seeing two or three timelines where there's variables based on choices. Now, everything, of course, is based on a choice. The whole point of knowing, giving a heads up, you know, you can decide what you want to do, walk across the street and get hit by a truck or not. But now what I've noticed is more and more it's that, yes, there's a storyline, but the storyline very often makes loops as we get sidetracked into other things, and then you come back. You know, it's like looping. Oh, I shouldn't have made that decision. Yeah, for whatever reason, get back on my own storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm seeing all these various possibilities of people. Now, when we enter into what we're talking about here tonight, I wonder how that alters timelines.
Interesting.
I wonder how it alters our storylines. And I gotta tell you, like 40 years ago, it wouldn't have occurred to me to tell somebody with a heart condition that they're going to have a transplant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was just. But again, for a couple of thousand years, well, as far as we know, that was not possible in our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, in somebody's, it was. So there's everything from, if you've taken an antibiotic, your life has been extended. But then you go into other long-term treatments, which I am. You know, if I don't take B12 injections, you know, I wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, with medication and science, we're extending our lives, so-called past our expiry date or best before, but we're still here living productive lives. And so now we're extending that even longer. And through the use of AI, could we conceivably live 200 years? Because everybody thinks that's a better timeline. But what is our productivity? What is our contributions? And yeah, for science, we can do that. But again, energetically and in the timelines, we're talking, again, those universes, parallel universes, the altered universes. What, you know, what is it that we're messing with? And how do we then intuitively guide our lives forward if we got nanobites mm-hmm. messing with our brain? I don't know. Those are just my questions. I don't have any idea what, you know, what that's all about. But
those are the funnest discussions to have. Those are the funnest questions to ask. You know, to ask a question that has an answer you can just look up, that's no fun. Let's tackle the real big stuff. Let's go ahead and push our minds and push our boundaries of awareness to encompass what is possible.
But as metaphysicians, that's what we do.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, Michael, we got a lot of people in the chat. So
we do. We do. I mean, I'm finally trying to be professional, and I have started a list as well.
Ione is first, I believe.
All right. And she is. And Dr. Ione, for you tonight, I have number 7, self-mastery. So from the Inner Oracle deck, we're going to pull a card for you. And of course, we're going to pull a tarot to accompany it. And we have number 7, self-mastery. To know who you are and why you are who you are is self-actualization. To choose and walk your own path is self-determination, giving inner peace. Not allowing others to dictate your behavior is self-control. Remain true to your convictions. This is self-mastery towards the path of self-completeness. Good card.
3 of diamonds in support of that, Ione. And I want to say that essentially in my reality and how I see it is have faith. You know, that self-mastery, have faith in yourself, believe in yourself. And if there's a question at the moment where you're self-doubting, just take a breath, you know, maybe just do a little meditation and empower yourself to make decisions that are right for you, no matter what other influences are around. So that's what I'm suggesting there, and that means.
I like it. I like it. All right, we have Anna next. And Anna, I have number 42 for you this evening, trust and integrity. Integrity means being true to oneself intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the 2 most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Well, as we know, everything is a duality. So every symbol, every kind of message, there's this way or that way, and you go with one that feels right. In this case, it's the Four of Diamonds. And essentially that symbolism is about being a little bit miserly, holding on to what you have, sitting still. And of course, it can always be a negative to that. But it could also be where somebody else is being more miserly and not letting you in or sharing. So this trust and integrity, I want to go with standing firm in what you have and just holding on to it for a bit. And but it's finances too here, Anna, is maybe not spending that extra money right now, even though somebody else might want you to or want to, you know, be a part of that, you know, the group purchase kind of thing. Is trust your instincts on this one. And if it's no, just stand firm in the no. Yeah. So I think we have Jamil next, Michael.
Well, if I wasn't on mute, I would have been saying that as well. But I say some of the best things on mute, I'll tell you that. But Jamil, yes, we have you up. And Jamil had pointed out, you know, we were talking about expanding our lifetime. He said, how about living 900 years or more like Master Yoda? I love it. Audra followed up by saying someone would still want to live to be 1,000, and that is me. I have always said 1,000 years. That's a good rate. You could, you know, do everything you wanted, explore every facet of life, you know, just pursue anything in 1,000 years. So that's what
I'm
shooting for.
Well, then we can talk about the immortals, those who live for thousands of years, you know, and that's another discussion.
Well, that and reincarnation.
This could be a part 2, 3, 4, I think.
So, Jamil, for you, I have one of my favorites, and I think you've gotten this before, wildcard number 1, paradox. A truth can be found in seemingly contradictory ideas. What may seem like a false proposition can be a set of new ideas and ways of thinking. Your solution may lay in the opposite direction than you think. Keep in mind that the cosmos works in equals and opposites. Not all truths lay in common opinions. This may be a time for contrarian thinking and opening your mind to what may not make sense at first. Thus, new perspectives are discovered.
Well, I'm going to give you kind of a paradoxical answer here, Jamil.
All right.
The Ten of Clubs, to me, essentially says you're getting to your destination, but there could be challenges and you feel like the burdens of that. So I guess the paradox is if you're feeling burdens, maybe you're supposed to and that's what it takes to get there, and or maybe just need to dump the burdens and walk clearer. So that's in the paradox. It's you have to do that kind of juggle in your thinking about does everything have to be hard? Or does this require that extra effort that it feels hard, you know, to get there? So there's no clear answer when it comes to paradox, I think. It's just the questions. So in asking the questions, then you can come closer to the answer that's right for you.
I love it. I love it. Sometimes just asking the question is the most important thing.
Exactly.
All right. We have Audra next. And Audra, I saw your chat there, so we're going to pull a card for Silas there at the end. But Audra, for you, I have wild card number 6, entropy. Within the cycle of life, there are useful energies, or low entropy, that can wane to uselessness, or high entropy. Their energy stands still and their entropy increases. They no longer give value to the evolution of life. This can include an attitude or behavior that requires adjustment to once again take a new step in renewal and rebirth, thus lowering one's entropy. When one seeks to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, that one lowers their personal entropy and the world is a better place.
I got the Hierophant in support of that, Audra, and I think quite simply it's saying, are there things kind of out of order? You know, it's like Dr. Kelly would say, you know, chaos just means things are like not in order. And if you're feeling like a little bit of stress, just some attention need to be given to routine, the home, maybe organizing a few things that makes you, you know, balances your entropy a little bit better. So I would say, you know, getting close to the weekend, why don't you just kind of, you know, stick around home, get things in order, go peace out, you know, and get your energy level back to where you want it to be.
I like it. Sounds like a good weekend to me. All
so
right.
So, shall we do Silas now?
Sure. Yeah, let's do Silas. And Silas, I'm going to go ahead and pick a card just for you. And Silas, I have number 31, Sacred Obligations. A sacred obligation is a sacrosanct duty that any higher being would render for the highest good of all concerned. Sacred obligations include do no harm, do right, pay it forward, uphold individual value, value all life, extend tolerance and equality, control and change only what one is entitled to control and change, evolve and grow as a human being with higher awareness, promote knowledge, not fear, and more. Continue to aspire to your highest good by recognizing and fulfilling your sacred obligations.
Well, I got the seven of diamonds in support of that, but I had a little flash here, Silas. So the seven of diamonds is that harvest after all the work. So you're putting in the effort, and you're on your way, and you're starting to reap the rewards or the benefits of it. And also, by believing in something, sticking to, as Michael has said, sacred obligations, your ethics, your morality. But I had a flash that somebody might want you to, get off track, distract you, bend the rules, or bend the rules that you wouldn't ordinarily bend. And I'm going to say to you, stay true to yourself and don't let anybody influence you in your direction.
Good advice. Give me one second. Make sure the dogs aren't killing one another. They're fine. There's not even any blood. All right. So I'll tell you, trying to get people to, I'm going to go ahead and skip on that joke that I had in mind because the dogs distracted me. But moving right along, we have Kat next. And Kat, I'm going to give you the card that I pulled when I was thinking about you. That is card number 5, Law of Control. Differences are inevitable. Diversity is desirable. The law of control says you cannot change or control others, but you can have a positive impact or influence. Control only that to which you are entitled to control. Do not give unsolicited advice. Respect that everyone has the same rights to self-creation and decisions. You can accept present circumstances as they are, lobby for change, or leave. Good card.
Well, I find I'm picking up a few diamonds here. This is the 6 of diamonds, Kat. And maybe the diamonds is because a lot of people are concerned about finances these days. That's kind of everywhere. But the law of control and finances is, the coming and going of money. It can be, having to pay out money or receiving money and how you balance that. I want to say here, I'm going out on a limb, I feel like you might be getting a little extra bit of money, but the question is, what do you want to do with it? And my instinct, my intuition says sit on it for a bit before you make that decision. There. So, okay, we have Dr. Mike. We're going to have Dr. Mike back because I really want to know about
Absolutely.
How that weekend went with MUFON.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it. We can wrangle that up. Dr. Mike, always happy to have you. Then tonight, I pulled number 4, Past, Present, and Future. The 3 universal laws of personal responsibility are, 1, you are accountable for your past, present, and future. 2, don't expect others to do for you what you can and should do for yourself. And 3, don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves. Remember, present circumstances reflect past choices. I can read. Embrace responsibility and move forward with renewed vigor.
Ooh, I got the Ace of Spades. Oh, that to me is success through a challenge, like an assured success, an assured kind of overcoming a difficulty, but I don't usually say this word, but you win. So if there is some kind of a negotiation or a controversial conversation about what you believe, it stick to what you're saying and what you see for the future, and it's an assured success. So you might be, it's kind of a dialogue with somebody to point out the consequences, point out, what's down the road, and then you have your way. So that's a big one. I just got chills on that one, I got to tell you, Michael.
Always like to hear that. It means you're on to something.
Yep.
All right. We have Dr. Edward next.
We do.
And Dr. Edward, I have wild card number 3, blocks. There is a time for movement and a time to sit still. What may seem like blocks could be an opportunity to reevaluate while allowing the universe to open new doorways. At times, we simply need to get out of our own way in order for events to unfold as they should. It can feel like free-falling when a leap of faith is required. If blocks continue, it may be a time for a new direction. Do not dismay. Blockages serve purposes. Diligence and insight is required, and remain open.
Well, I got the 5 of clubs in this case. I've always seen the 5 as, and the 5 of clubs in this way, is a dialogue diffuses a war. Or, you know, and I don't mean that literally, but a dialogue diffuses any kind of other battle or ensuing difficulty. So I want to say if there's certain blocks, it might be finding new words or new kind of communication, or it is finding a way to articulate what you want to get to cross, you know, to somebody else. And look, this doesn't necessarily have to be within a relationship. It can be a patient to a doctor. It can be a student to a teacher. You know, anyone where you're trying to get your point across and you're finding you're inhibited somehow. It's just take a breath and find out what energy is blocking things. Find a new way to communicate that, and success is assured.
I like it.
That's what I say.
All right. And we have Jenny next. And Jenny, glad to see you joining us tonight. Jenny, I have number 36, gratitude. Gratitude is the joy one feels in the heart when the mind awakens to the gifts of life, no matter how seemingly small or insignificant. The truest essence of love lives within the feeling of gratitude, desiring a connection with all life while giving freely without want for return. Gratitude is benevolence that wants to give forward. Take a compliment with graciousness and good manners when gratitude is extended.
Well, the 2 of diamonds, in support of the gratitude message, to me is that exchange of energy. You know, that interactiveness of energy and that balance of it. So it's what you're putting out, are you getting something back? And who's grateful for what? I know that kind of seems odd, but it's, you know, we always appreciate that thank you. But if you keep giving and no one's saying thank you, then just be grateful that you knew enough to know when to stop, kind of thing. And it's just that balance and gratitude. We know that you're grateful. Jenny, we know that you feel that, but sometimes we have to remind ourselves, but also look at our value and the value of others, you know, and keeping it in check.
All right. Next, we have Jean. And Jean, I have number 10, the indomitable power of the human spirit. The human spirit is unequaled in power. Nothing can defeat it. Within your creative ability, you are a powerhouse of energy that can be channeled into any endeavor. Given time, nothing is out of reach for you. Claim your power and live up to your human potential. Apply your powerful spirit to overcoming whatever obstacles stand in your way. Good card, and I really love it for tonight's topic, too.
And, Jean, I got the Queen of Hearts. So that's awesome. That's like living from your heart, living from your own truth, your own inner being, so to speak, so that it might be now that you're having to really tap into something deep in yourself, staying in that. And love in this case isn't flaky. It's but being loving of yourself as well as kind of, you know, emoting that feeling of love, even in a kind of a difficult situation. And that's where your greatest power lives, and you'll know the words to find as you need them. So that's a really empowering message for you tonight. Yep.
All right. I like it. And our last card of the evening is for Tabitha. And Tabitha, I have number 37, groundedness. Remain grounded by looking for evidence that supports or refutes claims or beliefs. Have a compelling and defensible basis for your beliefs, especially esoteric beliefs. An absence or denial of evidence does not assure a truthful conclusion. Be willing to examine beliefs, assumptions, and opinions and weigh them against facts. Suspend judgment until you have considered all of the facts or have more facts to uncover. Adjust opinions when new facts are found.
Oh, and the Wheel of Fortune with the gratitude card, the groundedness card, sorry. You know when to take chances and know when not to take chances. The Wheel of Fortune always says all the elements are there, all the elements are in your favor, but it's also about staying grounded and kind of step by step. So there isn't a real leap from like A to J. You have to go A, B, C, D, and so stay, keep it in perspective. So I can certainly see here, Tabitha, that there's opportunity for you, but make sure that you don't skip a beat, that you have to go back and repeat, or it sets the pathway kind of out of sync. So it's stay grounded in all the opportunities are coming. Sometimes we have to know that even if you're given a job offer, it doesn't mean you have to take it. Mm-hmm. It's intuitively knowing, is there something else, something better? And it's not always about the money, because
it's really not.
That one job that you think you're going to make more money, the difference could be $10 by the time they take off taxes. So, you've got to think in a grounded way of what serves you best and what you see for the picture of your life.
I love that.
So,
I like that. And, $10, $1,000, $10,000, you also have to factor in what kind of life are you going to be living and is it worth it? Stuff and great cards tonight. Always happy when we have such a good group, and I like the messages that this, that comes out from these cards. And just a quick shout out to our card keeper, Wendy. She wasn't able to join us tonight, but she is always missed. We always appreciate the time and effort that she put into tracking these cards and finding the patterns, and if she catches up and listens, want to let you know that you're appreciated and missed, and just thank you to everybody for joining us tonight. We appreciate having you.
I also know Wendy will listen in the archives, and we're also mentioning that because your name has been mentioned in our chat tonight.
Absolutely,
Wendy. So there,
absolutely.
People, where's Wendy?
All right. Well, now it's that time of our broadcast where I put Dr. Vicky on the spot.
Oh. All right. I really find the topic of transhumanism fascinating, and I know we're going to take on this topic again from another angle in a future program.
Mm-hmm.
I just somehow know it in my bones, Michael.
Absolutely.
But meanwhile, I just want to send a shout out to everybody. There's a lot of things going on in the world. A lot of people are feeling the pressures of inflation, and the list is long.
Mm-hmm.
Take one step and one day at a time, and just know that there is a solution, even if it's one we haven't thought of before.
Absolutely.
We're getting through it, and hang in there. Stay as optimistic as you can. And look, if you have a bad day, call a friend. Lean on your friends.
Good advice, lean on your friends, lean on your family that you have healthy relationships with, and when all else fails, find a furry buddy around, be they a cat, kitten, dog, pup. Some people like snakes, it's not my thing, but hey, whatever you bond with. But, so what I'm going to put you on the spot with, Dr. Vicky, is we talked about a couple of ideas. And what are we feeling for next week? Maybe the spirituality of mathematics and how it affects reality, or maybe spirits and energy and how, a home filled with life might attract a certain type of spirit or something like that. What are we feeling?
Hey, let's go there, Michael. Let's talk about, we'll find a name for it, but we're going to talk about spirits next week.
Okay.
And spiritual energy, spirit energy, what that is, who they are, and how that translates into our lives. And this isn't necessarily about demonic possessions, people,
mm-hmm.
but there are spirits everywhere. Not everyone believes in that. That's true. Even metaphysicians. So,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to talk about the different realities of spirits.
Yeah, I think
we all see that differently.
The metaphysics of spirit, energy, and what energy attracts them, maybe something along those lines. I love it.
I love it.
Absolutely. And, you know, don't knock demonic possession. I've been possessed by a demon for at least like 15 years, and it's been going great, you know. But, well, you know, it's that time of the evening. We've come to the end of our broadcast. I've loved this conversation. It went by so quickly, you know, so many facets to cover. And I think we're definitely going to circle back around to transhumanism, maybe attack it from a different angle. And as always, if you have any topics in mind, send them in. Join the Spirit of Life Broadcast Facebook group. You know, send me a message if you're interested. Of course, you can also chime in on our One Planet community. You know, we always love talking with you there. You can always email me at, I know my own email, drmichael@icmhchurch.org. So, you know, you can always send me your recommendations as well. Dr. Mike, we'll try to wrangle you into another broadcast coming up about your experiences. We're looking forward to hopefully twisting your arm on that. And I'm loving it. I love the crowds. I love the discussion. I love seeing you every week. And Dr. Vicky, any last thoughts before we sign off?
Nope. Just sending you all good vibes.
I couldn't say it better. So on that wonderful note, we're looking forward to seeing you next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.